Greetings, everyone. I'd like to, of course, as you can see by the slide, I'd like to talk about the parable of the Good Samaritan. It's actually one of the most popular parables known. It even has a hospital named after it, so everyone knows about the Good Samaritan. So today I'd like to talk about the lessons that we can get from it. It almost seems like a simple parable, but as I was going through it, I actually learned a lot from it. There's a lot more about this parable than even I thought I was going to find when going through it. So I'd like to talk about some of the lessons, and also something that I didn't really think I was going to find, but actually something that talks about Yahshua and what he did for us. So first, I'd like to begin by actually reading through the entire passage, and then I'll go through verse by verse and discuss each point. Luke 10:25 starts out the parable of the Good Samaritan. "And see, a certain one learned in the Torah stood up, trying him," and this is Yahshua, the him part, "and saying, 'Teacher, what shall I do to inherit everlasting life?' And he said to him, 'What has been written in the Torah? How do you read it?' And he answering said, 'You shall love Yahweh your Elohim with all your heart, and with all your being, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and as neighbor, and your neighbor as yourself.' And he said to him, 'You have answered rightly. Do this, and you shall live.' But he, wishing to declare himself righteous, said to Yahshua, 'And who is my neighbor?' And replying, Yahshua said, 'A certain man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and fell among robbers, who, both stripping and beating him, went away, leaving him half dead. And by coincidence, a certain priest was going down that way. And when he saw him, he passed on by the other side. And likewise, a Levite also, when he came to the place, and seeing, passed on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, journeying, came upon him. And when he saw him, he had compassion on him. And he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And having placed him on his own beast, he brought him to an inn. And looking after him and going out on the next day, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, 'Look after him, and whatever more you spend, I shall repay when I return.' Who then of these 3 do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the robbers?" And he said, "He who showed compassion on him." Then Yahshua said to him, "Go and do likewise." In verse 25, as we begin this, in verse 25, some things I like to kind of point out. So I'm going to do like a running commentary on each verse. So this certain one was a lawyer. And lawyers, of course, were experts in the law as they are nowadays. The law, in this case, is the law of the Bible. This happened to Yahshua a lot. He got a lot of lawyers or Sadducees and Pharisees asking him certain questions. It says that he comes to test Yahshua, trying him. You know, if you're actually coming to learn, typically you're not trying to ask certain pointed questions to almost teach. He's almost coming in a certain way, not really to learn anything from Yahshua, but he's really trying to goad him in a certain direction. He's asking him, "What shall I do to inherit everlasting life?" Now, he stands up, which means he must have been sitting down originally. Standing up was actually a sign of respect. So he kind of starts out right in a manner of respect, but as we'll see later, or as we did see, his actions are kind of contradictory. He shows this sign of respect, but in reality, his words aren't really matching up. And if you want one thing you learn about Yahweh and Yahshua is that they can't stand hypocrisy. They can't stand actions and words not matching up. So as we keep on going, "And he said to him, 'What has been written in the Torah? How do you read it?'" I love how Yahshua turns the question back on the person. It's a very Socratic type of way of teaching. Instead of just telling them what they need to know, they ask them a question. If you ask someone a question, it makes them think. Instead of you telling them what to think, it kind of challenges them a little bit more because now they have to kind of provide the answer for them. Yahshua, being the best teacher, the greatest teacher that ever is, he knew this, and that's why one of the reasons I believe he asked it this way. And he asked him, "You know what has been written in the law. How do you read it?" I mean, here's this expert in the law asking him this question. Obviously, this expert in the law thinks, you know, "I know what the law says. What do you think it says?" And Yahshua asked him to answer it. And he says, "You shall love Yahweh your Elohim with all your heart, and with all your being, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." The lawyer is quoting 2 different passages here. He's quoting Deuteronomy 6, verse 5, and he's quoting Leviticus 19, verse 8. The first part is when it gets to with all your mind. That's Deuteronomy 6, verse 5. And the next part, as your neighbor yourself, is Leviticus 19, verse 8. So what he's doing here is he's taking all of the law and putting it into its simplistic form, which is love. And Yahshua responds, and he said to him, "You have answered rightly. Do this and live." Now, this may have been a much different response than what the lawyer was thinking of. You know, he may have wanted him to go into some sort of philosophical debate or some sort of, oh, yes, this is how we should do it, and this is why, and such, and almost like an intellectual discussion on the thing. Yahshua just tells him simply, just do it, and you shall live. It wasn't complex, you know, like many, a lot of the Christian argument that says that the law is impossible to do, that, you know, Yahshua came to do away with the law because we can't do it. Obviously, Yahshua thinks that we can. I mean, obviously, you know, we can't earn our salvation through, you know, just through keeping the law. We have to have, you know, Yahshua. But he says right here that to have life, we must love. We must keep the commandments. Yahshua doesn't think of it as an impossible thing. And he shows an example later that it really isn't impossible, that it actually can be done. In verse 29, here we can see the lawyer really isn't happy with the response. He keeps on asking him questions. He's not, if he would have heard what Yahshua said, just do it and live, he would have been thinking, okay, how can I accomplish this? But he keeps on asking questions, trying to justify himself. You know, if the problem with a lot of the Jews in that time was they were very, discriminatory of people. As you'll see, like the Samaritans later, you know, they saw their people, they saw loving their own people as only them. They only saw their neighbor as maybe their own people. And, you know, you can kind of understand this. Leviticus 19, verse 18 says, "Do not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the children of your people. And you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am Yahweh." So you can kind of see where maybe this lawyer is taking it. Okay, who are my people? Like, who is my neighbor? Is it just the children of your people? So he's kind of trapping him in this response. So we can go back to this verse and say, you know, oh, you know, it's only the children of your people. How do you get out of that? But Yahshua knew about Leviticus 19, verse 34, that says that you're supposed to love a stranger as yourself. So the problem with what this lawyer was trying to do is, like most lawyers, they know the law very well, and they try to trap you in the law and try to make sure that you go a certain way that they want you to go. I think lawyers are, it's a needed thing, but I think too many times those who think they're experts in things think that they know too much and they can't be taught. So Yahshua continues on in verse 30. Verse 30. Yahshua replies here with a story. Now, this is a really interesting thing what Yahshua is doing. He doesn't just tell him, your neighbor is everybody. Then he could have gone into a philosophical debate. Well, who is everybody? Well, everybody is everybody. Well, what about, you know, he could have kept on going on and on. Yahshua responds with a story like he usually does. The power of a story is really great. If you think about different stories that have been written in our time, like the book The Jungle, it was a book about, it was written about the 1900s, early 1900s, about the work, or the conditions of factories and how terrible they were. That book itself reformed work conditions. It was a story about this family and how terrible it was, you know, working these conditions. That book itself reformed work conditions. The book Pride and Prejudice, which is actually known as like a chick book, is actually a book on what was quoted in the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal and should not be judged based on gender or caste system, because there was a difference. Men could do one thing and women had to do another thing. Or if you were in a certain caste system, you could do this, and if you're a lower class, you couldn't marry this way. That book teaches us some great principles, even though it's a book about love. Or the more popular game, Hunger Games, or more popular book, Hunger Games, which you may think is a book about this girl who can't decide which guy she loves, is actually a book about what totalitarian-type government looks like, what it looks like to be in that government, and also how to get out of it in some way. So Yasha here uses a story in that same way. Stories are very powerful. So as we begin, it says that this man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. Now this road was 17 miles long, and it was known for its robbers. Obviously, Yasha knew this, otherwise he wouldn't have used this for an example. It says that they stripped him and beat him. Now, stripping him is important because people at that time were known by who they were, by their clothes and their speech. If you look at, like, you know, different periods in time, like Renaissance period, they had these big hats or these plumes or different clothes and stuff, or you see a pauper with different clothes. You knew who a person was based upon their clothing, or even the king. You know, a king wore a certain garb as opposed to what a peasant would wear. Same thing in this era, too. If you dressed a certain way, you were known as a certain person. So anyone who would be walking by would not know who this man was. They wouldn't know if he was, you know, royalty, whether he was a priest, whether he was a Roman. You couldn't tell who he was. And you couldn't really hear what he said because they had beaten him and leaving him half dead. Obviously, he wasn't, you know, talking very well. Verse 31, by coincidence, a priest was going by. Now, there actually was a priest settlement going from that was in Jericho. So this would have been common for the priest to go from Jerusalem to Jericho. This priest didn't know who this man was. Also, another thing, too, Yasha didn't specify what day of the week it was on, either. It could have been the Sabbath, which is very important because the Sadducees or the Pharisees were very critical of Yasha, saying that you could help people on the Sabbath. So it may have been on the Sabbath, but for some reason, this priest just kept on walking by. You know, the priest may have been ceremonially unclean, or ceremonially clean going to a certain thing, to a ceremony. So you may have thought that, well, you know, I have a higher duty to achieve. You know, I have these responsibilities that I have to do. Therefore, I can't help him. Someone else is going to have to help him. Or maybe you thought, well, I don't have time for this. You know, I'm important. I've got things I've got to do. He's all right. Or maybe he thought, well, you know, I don't know who he is. You know, maybe he's trying to rob me or something. A lot of things may have been going on, but Yasha didn't go into depth to explain these things because, as you'll find out later, he doesn't really think any of that's really important. Verse 32, likewise, a Levite also passed by. A Levite were, of course, those who were dedicated to Yahweh's service. They assisted the priest. So we thought, you know, maybe this man will help. Well, he kept on walking by. Maybe he saw the priest ahead of him, didn't help him. They thought, well, you know, the priest isn't going to help him. Well, I don't have to help him either. Or, you know, it doesn't give the description of what he did. The point is that here are these two men, just like the lawyer, who knew the law. They were experts in the law. They knew exactly what was to do it. But there was this disconnect between knowing the law and actually applying the law. And continuing on to verse 33, but a certain Samaritan. Now, it's important here, Samaritans were vile to the Jews. They were, whenever the Assyrians captured Judah, and they took them prison, captured them, they intermarried, which was different from what, Israel, yeah. The northern kingdoms, they got assimilated by the Assyrians, and they intermarried amongst the Assyrians. Whereas whenever Judah was assimilated into the Babylonians, they did not intermarry. So they thought that this was a sin, this was a travesty to them that they did this. Also, after the temple was reconstructed, the Samaritans came down and actually defiled the temple by pouring blood upon it. That's a pretty terrible thing. They were actually considered worse than the Romans. And you got to imagine, the Romans were their conquerors. They were the ones who taxed them. They were the ones who were over them. They were their, you know, you couldn't do anything unless the Romans told you you could do it. They were considered worse than the Romans, and they just, you know, could not stand them. So there's a contrast that Yasha is doing here of these religious people versus this vile person who obviously shouldn't do what's right or is considered, you know, terrible. But he's the one who actually does something. You know, he came upon him, he saw him, and he had compassion upon him. A very different response than what the other two people did. In verse 34, it says, he went to and bandaged his wounds, pouring oil and wine, placed him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn and looked after him. You know, he took action. His knowledge of what was to do is right was consistent with, you know, what he knew was consistent with his actions. And that's what's most important. You know, which was worse? The robbers who did the act of evil in robbing this man and stripping him, or the priests and the Levites in action? If you think about it, there really isn't much of a difference between the two. Action, inaction is still action. You're still doing something, even though it's a lack of something. You're still doing something. Those priests decided to, their action was to walk by. Now, granted, you may think that the robbers was more malicious, but the priests and Levites had a lack of love. So which is worse, a lack of love or a maliciousness? You know, Joshua didn't really think of much of a difference, and even in James didn't think so either. He says in James 4, verse 17, "To him then who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin." So knowing to do what is right and not doing it is the same as doing what's wrong. In this verse, going back, oil and wine were expensive commodities. So this man that, the Samaritan that helped this man, was actually giving out of his own resources. They weren't cheap. I'm not sure what it would be, you know, in our terms and stuff, but you know, it wasn't something he just gave freely. Something that he gave, you know, out of his kindness. He went the extra effort. In verse 35, it says, "Going out the next day, he took out 2 denarii, gave the innkeeper, and said to him, 'Look after him. Whatever more you spend, I shall repay you when I return.'" 2 denarii, I found out, is 2 days' wages. So if you make $15 an hour, that means you would have to give $240 to help the stranger. Now, could any of us, and you know, this is a hard question for me too, because it's not like any of us are just loaded with money. You know, even people who make decent amount of money, it's funny because the more money you make, the more taxes are taken out. So every one of us is kind of struggling, even those who may have better off. Would you be able to give $240 to some guy you just saw on the street? You know, someone who was hurt, someone who needed help. Would you be able to do that? You know, it says he'll repay back whatever he owed later. So, you know, this guy basically had a free ride, almost, a free place to stay, and there was nothing that the other man, he didn't expect anything back in return. In verse 36, Joshua then concludes this parable with saying, "Who then of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the robbers?" You know, Joshua asks the question instead of telling the answer again. He puts this question back on this lawyer. And the lawyer responds, he said, "He who showed compassion on him." Then Joshua said to him, "Go and do likewise." He actually puts it back upon the lawyer to do it, that it's about action. It's about doing something. You know, great thoughts are really nothing without action. There are a lot of great thinkers in our world. There are a lot of great books out there that are written. But unless we actually, even in this book too, you know, this is the greatest book that's ever been written before, but unless we actually take the action of what it says, we might as well just put it back in the bookshelf. Because great thoughts without action are worthless. The analogy that I like to draw with this parable is what Joshua does for us. You know, Joshua says, "Go and do likewise." Joshua lives his advice. That's one thing that's so great about, one of the things you can say that's so great about him, is he doesn't give you advice, some, you know, philosophical parable, and then he doesn't do the thing he tells you to do. John 13:34, it says, "A renewed covenant I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another." You know, Joshua did the same thing for us. He loved us, therefore he expects us to love one another. You know, in verse 30, it talks about a man who is beaten, you know, who's going down, who's robbed and stripped. You know, are we not this person? Are we not the person that's been beaten down? Do we not live in a world that beats us, the sinful world that tries to destroy our righteousness? You know, was not the Garden of Eden stripped from us because of a sin of our parents, of Adam and Eve. You know, we have been born to die. You know, it's sad. It's sad to hear the passing of Jim Still, but you know, this you're born into this world knowing that you're going to die. It's a terrible thing that we all have to deal with. We are this person. We are the ones who have been beaten, have been stripped of all these things because of the sin that has been brought upon us. And not just because of what Adam and Eve did, but because of our own actions, because of our own sinful nature. We need someone to help us. We need Joshua to come and help us. In verse 31, it talks about the Samaritan. You know, Joshua being this outcast. You know, Joshua was an outcast in his day. You know, the people who should have accepted him the most, the people who knew the law, who knew of the prophecies, those are the ones who rejected him the most. These are the ones who didn't think that he was a Messiah. Joshua is like this Samaritan, a person who is rejected, an outcast. You know, in verse 33, it talks about, you know, this the man who is hurt. Joshua sees us in this condition that we're in, this sinful state, this helplessness almost, of trying our best to do what's right and always failing and always being in this sinful state. He comes, he sees us and has compassion upon us and saves us. You know, he not only raises up our spirits physically, he raises us up from the dead in time to come. He has come to save us from sin and from death. In verse 34, it says that he pours oil and wine and binds up his wounds. And in Psalms 147, verse 3, it says, he heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. This is Joshua. He is the one who binds our wounds. He's the one who sees the condition we're in, the sinful state that we're in, and helps us. He came down from heaven, and he helps us. You know, he gave up everything for us. In this verse, he places him on an animal. He's a kind servant to us. He, instead of expecting us to walk, he helps us and has us lean on him so that we can keep on going and keep on doing what's right. In verse 35, In verse 35, I found this actually really interesting. It says, and going down the next day, he took out 2 denarii, giving it to the innkeeper, and said to him, look after him, and whatever more you spend, I shall repay you when I return. So he gives money. He gives something to us. What does that remind you of? Giving him imparting something to us. Well, that tells me that's like the Holy Spirit that is imparted to us. The portion that is given to us to help us, the comforter that is given to us, and repay you when I return. Yahshua's coming back. He talks about him coming back, but he's given us something to help us through until he returns. And when he does, he's going to take away all these problems. So we ought to love as he loved us. Like I said, he gave up everything for us. He gave up his power. He gave up his position. He gave up his life. He gave up his connection to Yahweh for a time. And when he was on the stake, he lost that connection to Yahweh, which I believe to him was more precious than even life and his power. He gave up all these things for us. And he asked us, if he can do this for us, he asked us to do the same thing for others. So how did this Samaritan love others? Well, first thing, he saw a need. He showed compassion on that person. He didn't just do it with words, but he did it with action. And he helped even though it was inconvenient for him. You know, I'm sure this Samaritan had things. Maybe he had a family. Maybe he had things. Maybe he has work he has to go to. I mean, obviously, I'm not telling you to just disregard those things. But he saw that it may not have been very convenient for him, but he still helped anyways. So he didn't look at what others were doing. You know, maybe he saw what this priest had not done, or maybe he saw what the Levite didn't do. He ignored that. He knew what needed to be done, and he did it. We need to become a servant, like this Samaritan did. He tended the wounds, and he put them on his beast. And now, serving is not an easy thing, because we have to look outside our own needs. And that's not a very easy thing. You know, when someone asks you to do something, sometimes you're like, well, I don't want to do it. I want to do my own thing. It's very difficult sometimes to serve others because you have to think less of yourself, less of your own needs, and more of their own needs. And you will feel better afterwards, but at the time, it's not going to be very easy. We have to look to others' needs. We have to look outside of ourselves. And the other thing this man did is he gave without expected return. You know, he loved without thinking. You know, he didn't give the man who was beaten a slip of paper saying, you owe me this much to be, you know, paid back by this time, or I shall give you another beating. He did not say that. He gave without expected return. So in conclusion, Yahweh showed his love to us by sending Yahshua. Yahshua showed his love to us by sacrificing himself for us. And from their example of love, we ought to love one another. Hopefully we'll want to be more like the Samaritan and less like the priest and the Levite. That was, you know, not that there's anything wrong with priests or Levites, but obviously they had a problem with the action. We should be more like this, what this Samaritan did. We need to love at all times, and this kind of love is actually life to us. Yahshua says, do this and you shall live. So Yahweh wants us to live. So let's do this and live. May Yahweh bless.